This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. The dog days of summer are here. And you know, that phrase is generally used to describe the hot, muggy days late in the season, when even our four-legged friends don't have the energy to do anything except sit around and pant, just trying to keep cool. But I'll bet you didn't know that that phrase did not originate with dogs. It may have originated with Greek astronomy. Nevertheless, like dogs, many mammals pant to regulate their body temperature. Other animals like ectotherms, lizards, amphibians, and insects have to look to their environment for a cool, shady spot. And of course, we humans are in a category of our own. Believe it or not, we are the only mammal that relies on secreting water onto the surface of our skin to stay cool, to sweat. But how did we develop this ability? And when did we ditch the fur of our primate ancestors in favor of sweaty skin? This week, we're taking a refreshing dive into the world of thermoregulation. That means ways humans and animals evolved to beat the heat. Have you a question about adaptive behaviors for staying cool? Give us a call. Our number, 844-724-8255, 844-SciTalk, or tweet us at SciFry. Yana Kambarov is assistant professor of genetics at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Kambarov.
Thank you, Ira. How are you?
Yeah, fine. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Rory Telemico is a postdoctoral scholar in the Department of Biological Sciences at Auburn University. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you.
Yana, let's talk about why furry animals have to pant to stay cool. What does that do for them?
Well, so panting, as you said, is something that furry animals do. And basically, all kind of cooling in mammals involves, to a large extent, the heat that's needed to convert water from a liquid to a gas and the energy that's lost in doing that. And so furry animals pant basically in order to take air in. Mm-hmm. Use that to dissipate body heat. They do it in their upper respiratory tract. In a horse, you know, that big snout that a horse has. Mm-hmm. You're getting evaporative cooling inside that big snout. And it's basically, an animal using convection essentially to evaporate water off of
right.
a surface.
It's right? like when you come out of the shower, you feel cold
exactly.
because the water is evaporating off
exactly.
of you.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. So what about our primate ancestors? Is that what they did also?
Well, so if we look at our closest primate relatives, chimpanzees, gorillas, if we even look beyond that into outside of the great apes and we look at macaques, for example, old world monkeys, we see that panting is the main mechanism by which they thermoregulate, by which they dump their body heat. And so it stands to reason that our ancestors, our last common ancestor with the chimpanzee would also have panted. But something changed over the course of human evolution, perhaps having to do with the fact that we became striding bipeds and later evolved endurance running capabilities, which altered how we as a species thermoregulate and sent us down a very unique path. But the idea is that, we mm-hmm. probably very similar to a chimpanzee. Panting is a main mechanism to cool off is probably what our human ancestors did.
Now, you were talking about horses panting, but don't we all see horses sweating all the time also?
They do. So, right, exactly. So horses lather up. But so what's distinguishing about humans are not the only species that sweats, but it's the kind of sweat that we have, right? So as you said, we have sweat glands that secrete water onto the surface of the skin. Horses have a different type of gland. A lot of cursorial animals, actually, running animals, have this. They are called apocrine glands, and they're associated with the hairs on the horse's body. And what they secrete is not water, but it's actually rather a mixture of some water, some lipids, some fat, some protein. It's not the same. It's basically a different substance that's being secreted. But the horse's main mechanism is going to be panting to cool off.
I didn't know that. I always thought the sweating was.
It's a different kind of sweating. Yeah, it's a different kind of sweating.
Now, Rory, your animals that you study don't sweat.
Correct.
What do they do?
Well, they have an entire suite of traits that they can use to cool off. Probably the foremost thing is selecting a cooler area or a warmer area and shuttling back and forth between them.
So
and
we're
humans will do that some too, going to shade and whatnot.
So we're talking about lizards and amphibians and insects and stuff like that.
Yeah, pretty much every animal other than a bird or a mammal. So even like nematodes will thermoregulate some. Fish, yeah.
So I guess for a lizard or an animal that lives in a hot, dry climate, sweating would be very disadvantageous because then you'd have to get the water back in your body somehow.
Correct. One of the sort of main evolutionary events that happened in the evolution of reptiles in particular and the sort of the land-dwelling amniote was ways to retain water. So that's why they have that really heavy, thick, scaly skin, is it enables them to retain water. They do still use evaporative cooling some. So if you really heat up a desert-dwelling lizard, as it starts to get towards its temperatures that are potentially dangerous, they'll open up their mouth to allow the membranes of the mouth, which are very wet, to have evaporation occur across them, which particularly cools the head down and allows the brain to cool off.
Interesting. So, Dr. Kamborov, why did we develop the ability to sweat instead of pant? What was the advantage there?
That's sort of a million-dollar question. So we actually can't pant because of sort of structural changes in the human body. You know, for example, we don't have that big snout that a horse is going to have, right? Our face is a very reduced snout. So there are a couple of hypotheses that exist as to why humans develop such a unique way to dissipate heat. One possibility is that it enabled us to basically explore a niche that was free of predators. So, you know, if you cool off the way a human does, you basically can go out during the hottest periods of the day when most predators are going to be hiding themselves from heat, right? Because that they're going to stay out of the sun, essentially. We, on the other hand, are able under very strong radiant heat to just sweat, right? To cool ourselves off, kind of opens up an avenue for us to, we're not very fast, right? To go and exploit a niche that otherwise wouldn't be available. Hmm. Another hypothesis is that basically about 2 million years ago, really with the inception of the genus Homo, there is evidence that suggests that humans develop adaptations that made them good endurance runners. So we could do persistence running, persistent hunting and gathering, and that generates a tremendous amount of body heat, right? And so you need a way to dump that heat load. Now, if you're going to be running, you know, a horse at full gallop cannot pant. So its main mechanism for cooling off is not available because of, again, the way in which kind of the organs are going to push on the body as the quadruped is going to, a four-legged animal is going to slant forward. So again, your main mechanism isn't available to you. On the other hand, humans can run around at our full speed and still manage to cool off. So there's a hypothesis that this allowed us to exploit persistence hunting, for example, or cover, again, long distances in the hot midday sun in the sort of warm regions where humans first evolved.
Hmm, interesting. Meg tweeted us a nice picture of her cat. And you know, a lot of cat pictures, but it's a nice question. She says, how do cats cool down? I read their paws can sweat a little, but my cat pants after a game of mouse.
That's right. So cats cool off by panting. But it is true that humans have a very, very specialized kind of sweat gland. I mentioned apocrine glands, which exist in horses. Sweat glands, eccrine sweat glands, which are the glands that secrete water onto the surface of human skin, in virtually all other mammals outside of the closest primate relatives to humans, those glands are restricted to the bottom of the paws. In those, if you look at the bottom of your cat's foot, remember what you see is that thick pad, and then in between you see a bunch of hair. That thick pad is just chock full of sweat glands. And what those sweat glands are actually used for in this case is not for thermoregulation, but they're used for traction. So how much friction there is between the animal and the surface that it's walking on. You can sort of think about when you have a dry palm and you try to just slide your palm across the surface, it sort of just skids. So you need a little bit of...
People spit on their hands before they...
That's right. That's right. Gives you a little traction. Exactly.
That's kind of interesting. Rory, we never think of insects as getting overheated, but can they get too hot for some insects?
Yes, they sure can. They have some of the highest thermal tolerances of animals. They can tolerate temperatures often into the upper 40s C, so they're getting around into the low 100s Fahrenheit. But they will overheat, and they'll break down just like any other animal if it gets too hot.
So when they break down, does that mean they just collapse and have to wait for it to get cooler, or does it kill them?
It depends on exactly how hot it gets. It will first cause them to basically just almost go into a torpor state. They look almost catatonic if you heat them up to just that point. And then if you cool them down, they usually can recover. But if you go just a degree or more over that, it will kill them.
Wow. That's true of butterflies, other insects?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yep, all of the insects. And butterflies are a neat example because they, a good ways below that, before they get that hot to where they just can't right themselves or do anything, they stop being able to really fly because their flight muscles exert enough heat.
How hot would that be in outside? What temperature would that be?
Upper 90s, low 100s.
Really?
If their body temperature gets that hot.
Then we're going to see a lot of that now, aren't we?
Well, potentially, right. But they still can behaviorally thermoregulate. So the first thing that would happen is they would adjust the sort of time of day that they're out flying or potentially whether or not they can go into a shady area, let their body cool down, and then fly some more. They also, when they're up in the air, are being able to cool through convection just by blowing through the air, which can help bring that down a little bit. But eventually, you're right, they will get hot enough that they have to land and stop feeding or stop ovipositing.
This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking about sweating with Yana Kambarov and Rory Telemico. Let me ask you this, Dr. Kambarov. Recent research shows that too many tattoos can interfere with your sweat glands. Have you heard about that?
I've vaguely heard about this. Someone forwarded me the article. I haven't actually had a chance to look at it. I mean, it's not surprising. You're going to damage the skin a bit where the sweat glands live, and you might be damaging some of the vasculature, some of the blood vessels. You might be damaging some of the nerves that control sweating. That would argue that you shouldn't completely cover yourself in tattoos. That would be very bad if you're in a hot place.
And Rory, speaking of hot, when it gets hot out, you know, we like to go jump in the lake or a pool or something like that. Is that what animals that can't regulate, like amphibians, is that what they do also? Why we see the, you know, frogs in the ponds and things like that?
Yeah, to some extent. The frogs have to stay in the water as well, just because if they dry out, they die. But being in the water helps because as they're cooling, enough evaporative cooling happens just by sitting in a puddle because the skin of frogs can shed water so readily that they're sitting there in their puddle, they don't dry out, but they're shedding water, allowing them to cool off, and they rarely will get too hot as long as they stay moist.
That's quite interesting. If we are sweating because we want to stay cool, what about the sweating we do when we get nervous? You know, sweaty palms or armpits.
Yeah, sweaty palms, exactly. So it turns out the way that those glands are innervated, so remember that the ancient condition, right, the ancestral condition, is sweat glands in the hands and the feet. And the way that those are innervated is actually different than the thermoregulatory sweat glands that are in the rest of your body that are primarily responsible for cooling you off, which sort of makes sense, right? You're not going to have, as Rory mentioned, a tremendous amount of convection when you're standing on top of your sweat glands, right? Mm-hmm. So when you get nervous, your hands start to sweat, and it's just the neurotransmitters that are the main activators of those sweat glands are different than the neurotransmitters for the rest of the body.
So they may have evolved a different way.
Ultimately the way to sort of going back to your earlier question of when did all this happen and why did humans develop this unique system of thermoregulation, if we know what the genetic causes are for this, then we can actually date when it happened, right? If we know the genetic changes that are responsible for expanding sweat glands from being just on the bottom of the feet to being everywhere in the human body, then we can learn sort of when this occurred and have a sense of perhaps why it occurred in humans.
Well, but oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no. So, yeah, but no, just... So the basic mechanism of how you build a sweat gland in the palm, right? There's got to be a kind of a basic mechanism of how the skin decides to build a sweat gland versus some other skin-derived organ like a hair, right?
Yeah.
But then there's, as you said, an extra layer that's going to be put on top of that, that this is a thermoregulatory sweat gland that's going to respond differently than sweat glands in the palms.
So in general, and summing up, sweating is a good thing then.
Sweating is a very, very good thing, and it's really, actually, I'm going to go ahead and plug this. So there are studies that go back to the 1930s and the 1940s by Japanese scientists, which actually demonstrated that where you spend your first 2 years of life dictates how many of the sweat glands you're actually born with will become activated. So which makes it, so sweating is very important. So keeping your children purely in air conditioning is going to affect their ability to thermoregulate later in life. So it's important to sweat, to be exposed to heat, to sweat during those first 2 years of life.
Get the kids out of the house in the hot weather.
Get the kids out of the house, exactly.
All right. That's a great way to sum up. Thank you. That's all the time we have. Anna Kambarov is Assistant Professor of Genetics at the Perelman School of Medicine at University of Pennsylvania. And Rory Talamico is Postdoctoral Scholar in the Department of Biological Sciences at Auburn University. I think we learned so much about sweat. Didn't know that. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.